cactus, sand, rock, blistering heat by day, withering cold by night. Rattlesnakes, coyotes, Gila monsters, cougars, scorpions. The desert is hostile, dangerous, merciless. Still, some of us just can't stay away. It's the femme fatale of biomes. You know it's bad for you, maybe lethal, but that doesn't make you want or need it any less. It can burn you and bake you, leave you dried out and mindless. If you make it out alive, before you've even fully recovered, you'll be thinking about returning. What is it about the desert? How does it fascinate and addict? What is its allure? It's a crazy cocktail, equal parts mystery, solitude, and danger. When you drink it, you get a taste of the weird, the bizarre, and the unexplained.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
I just returned from Palm Springs and thereabouts. Everybody's heard of that place. It's one of a string of towns in the Coachella Valley. For decades, it's been a getaway destination for L.A. It started out as a few hotels and restaurants and golf courses. The Rat Pack used to hang there. Elvis had a crib in town. I guess the stars could get around without being swamped by the fans. Now there are casinos and tourist shops stacked on top of each other, miles of condos and strip malls. You can still drive to the edge of town and see the finite place where civilization ends and the wilderness of the desert begins, but still it doesn't quite scratch that itch. As you head into the Coachella Valley from Los Angeles, you know you're close by two landmarks. The originals are the famed Cabazon dinosaurs, life-sized concrete effigies of a Brontosaurus and T-Rex, just sitting there on the north side of the 10 freeway at the doorstep of the famed San Gorgonio Pass. Those dinosaurs used to be visible from miles away. They were lit from beneath at night, looked as if they might thunder onto the road and squash your car beneath their monstrous feet. They were featured in lots of movies, most famously maybe Pee-wee's Big Adventure. They really made an astonishing sight. But California, being run by harlots and pimps with no regard for its own history, has allowed corporate retailers to erect their shitty stores in front of the dinosaurs, so they're now obscured from the road. The other landmark at the gateway to Palm Springs is the towering Morongo Hotel Casino, which, if you have a hankering to gamble in a place with the ambiance of a bus station, by all means, stop there. It's got concrete flooring, it's got fluorescent lighting, it's got everything to make you feel like a loser before you play a single slot or a hand of blackjack. But once you pass it, and you really should, you get a heaping helping of industrial desert weirdness in the form of thousands of wind turbines in that vast mountain pass. It's one thing to drive by them at 80 miles an hour, but you really need to get up close and personal to them to fully appreciate their scale and strangeness. They're about 300 feet tall. Each fan blade is 150 feet long and weighs a ton. When you stand beneath them and hear those blades whoosh and feel the thrum of the generators as you're shrouded in shadow of a mountain that's a 2-mile-high sheer vertical wall of rock, well, the feeling is chilling. It's like being on some other planet. There you are, surrounded by so-called technology. Then you look around and see that the desert itself does not give a shit about technology. The planet's got its own technology that's been around a hell of a lot longer and will endure and prevail over whatever trinkets and rusting gizmos we can come up with. You watch packs of coyotes running down jackrabbits. You see the corpses of birds that were chopped by those spinning fan blades, shrouded by a cloud of flies as they mulch into the sandy floor. You look up again and notice just how many of those turbines refuse to turn. They're busted. The entire wind farm is barely efficient. If the winds exceed 55 miles an hour, which they frequently do, the blades are programmed to lock up because they can't handle high RPMs. So what the fuck is the point? The whole project would tank if not for heavy government subsidies. Technology. But I digress. Trudging through a landscape of steel and sand and sagebrush and creatures all whipped by an incessant wind might be as close as you can get to a true off-world experience. And for some reason, desert people have a tremendous interest in off-world lore and legend. From Roswell to Area 51 to the Sedona Vortexes, many believe the desert is the portal of intergalactic or maybe interdimensional travel. And why would that be? You don't hear much about those phenomena in the mountains or the farmland or at the shore. Why are desert people so much more peculiar and obsessed with the weird than, say, coastal dwellers? Economics might be a part of it. For a square foot of oceanfront property, you can buy an acre of desert land. So right there, it's going to attract a different kind of person. Not that everyone in the Mojave is poverty-stricken. Las Vegas is in the Mojave, and plenty of millionaires and billionaires there. Plenty of money in Palm Springs and other desert cities. But on balance, desert people tend to be less affluent, certainly than those at the shore. They also prize their solitude. They are of the Robert Frost school of socialization. Good fences make good neighbors. And because of the remoteness and the solitude, many people head out to the desert to disappear and be left the fuck alone. Some just want that anonymity, and others need that anonymity. They're on the lam. Charles Manson was a desert rat. It is the go-to zone for lots of criminals and some with crime in their minds and or maybe just general-purpose fuckery. Like L. Ron Hubbard, author of the goofy sci-fi books and founder of Scientology. He used to haul ass up to the Mojave High Desert with his buddy Jack Parsons. By the way, the term high desert refers to the altitude, not necessarily a drug-induced state, although there's plenty of crossover. Some parts of the high desert might be a mile up and a world away from the glitz and commercialism of the valley. And Jack Parsons, he was a chemist and a rocket engineer, one of the co-founders of Jet Propulsion Labs. Those guys put men on the moon. Together, Jack and Ron Hubbard tried to conjure up an Egyptian goddess named Babylon. They even had a name for the endeavor, the Babylon Working. Part of the conjuring procedure involved sex magic. That's magic with a CK. There was allegedly some talk of sacrificing a virgin to facilitate the process, but apparently that never happened. Were they really after an Egyptian goddess? Odds are, they wanted to get hold of the whore of Babylon for a super-duper sex magic three-way in the dunes. It's funny how some people can be so smart in one area, like rocketry, and so naive in another, like life. Parsons actually believed all the bullshit coming from Aleister Crowley, Mr. 666, the beast, the occultist over in England. They even had some correspondence. Parsons became pretty wealthy in his 20s and bought a huge mansion in Pasadena. It was an orgy palace, and Hubbard got wind of that and scoped out Parsons for an idiot savant and began to siphon off some of his jing. When the Babylon working didn't work out, Hubbard convinced Parsons to invest in a nutball business, buying yachts on the East Coast, sailing them through the Panama Canal, and then reselling them at a profit on the West Coast. So Hubbard put up $1,200 to Parsons' $20,000, hell of a ratio. And this was in the 1940s when 20 grand was real money. Then off Hubbard went yacht shopping to the Atlantic coast, and he took Parsons' girlfriend with him, a big rangy blonde named Sarah Northrup. That was the last Parsons saw of his woman or his money, but he did cast a spell on Hubbard as retribution. That didn't work out so well either. Shortly thereafter, Hubbard became sick rich with his new religion, Dianetics, later renamed Scientology. Trust the science. Parsons continued to spiral downward until he was reduced to fabricating squibs for movies in some Mexican hovel where he blew himself to bits. His ashes were brought back to the States and scattered, where else? Somewhere in the Mojave. At almost 50,000 square miles, that's a pretty big somewhere. I've often wondered if I've ever stepped on particles of Parsons while hiking up there. Another famous Parsons was partially immolated in the Mojave, Gram Parsons, one of the pioneers of country rock. I visited his last stop, Joshua Tree, in episode 238, Larry's Desert Mirage. That was sort of a prequel to this show, and you can find it at thatlarryshow.com in the January 2020 tab. Legions of writers, artists, and musicians head into that high desert in search of inspiration. Some find it, often with the help of psychedelic drugs. The list is long and storied. Jim Morrison, the Eagles, Keith Richards, Bono, and U2. Most of the legends of the Mojave are in dust or broken ruins, but one looks pretty damn fresh. The famed Integratron. What is that? Well, I took some pictures of it just for you, which you can view at the show page. It's a domed structure with a lot of windows built by an oddball named George Van Tassel. He had a similar aerospace resume to Jack Parsons, but at a lower level. And one night, way up in the high desert in a spot called Landers, Van Tassel was meditating when a spaceship from Venus stopped by and instructed him, verbally and telepathically, to build the Integratron, which would heal many human ailments and rejuvenate cells. Furthermore, those kindly Venusians gave George the blueprints for building a machine that would enable anti-gravity and time travel. Well, of course I had to see the place. So away we went up State Road 62 through the odd little town of Joshua Tree, onto narrow roads named Yucca Mesa and Old Woman Springs. They were two-lane blacktop strips surrounded by absolutely nothing, until finally, there it was, the Integratron. It looked smaller than it seemed in pictures, and the view is blocked by a solid fence along the road, but if you go a little farther and make a right onto a dirt road, there's only some knee-high rusty barbed wire between you and cellular rejuvenation, maybe even time travel. As so often happens, Van Tassel never got to realize his dream in the desert. He died before the Integratron was fully operational. But he did get a book published. I Rode a Flying Saucer. Not I Rode in a Flying Saucer. I Rode a Flying Saucer. Which makes me think of Slim Pickens straddling the atomic bomb at the end of Dr. Strangelove. The book is still available on Amazon. And at only 44 pages... that ride must have been a fast spin around the Van Allen belt. In the year 2000, three savvy siblings, the Carl sisters. They took the place over, fixed it up, and extended the magic menu. They now offer therapeutic sound baths, by appointment only. It seems you recline inside the Integratron and somebody runs a stick around the edges of crystal sound bowls, and that fixes what ails you. Unfortunately, the place was locked when we arrived late in the afternoon. The shadows were lengthening, and the wind was kicking up. As I took some pictures, I saw something dart at the base of a Joshua tree. It was a kangaroo rat. They look like a furry tennis ball with impossibly long hind legs and a tail like a bullwhip. They hide from the heat all day and bounce around in the evening trying to find some food while not becoming food for snakes and coyotes. I watched him nibble at something, then bounce away. He covered 6 feet easy in a single leap. I've seen a lot of rats, but none could do that. So I got curious. Seems those little guys have been bouncing around the Mojave for something like 60 million years. When they jump, it would be like a person jumping 60 feet. They can survive indefinitely without water. They've got some kind of system built into their noses that extracts moisture from the air. Right after he vanished, a turkey buzzard swept low and plucked something from the ground. It wasn't very big. Those birds are the janitors of the desert. What they miss, the ravens and flies will polish off. It's a perfect system, with each player doing its thing on autopilot. An orchestrated, regulated, symphonic cycle of life, death, and rebirth. And along came human beings, rudely late arrivals to the party that's been functioning flawlessly forever, and without our intervention. We're like the worst party guest imaginable. The guests that show up empty-handed or bring fruit-flavored beer, the kind only they like. Then they piss in the pool or leave an unflushed load in the dumper. What do we bring to the desert party? The Babylon workings to conjure an Egyptian spirit that never existed. Isn't that necessary? Or a new religion pulled from the pages of third-rate science fiction written by a proven con artist. Or a wooden dome with sound bowls and imagined geomagnetic vortexes pulled out of our asses. Ooh, and of course, those rusting pinwheels in the mountain pass that don't generate enough power savings to pay for their own maintenance. But we keep coming up with fresh ideas. Someday, there will come the final idea. Some hazmat-suited ghoul in a bioweapons lab in Wuhan or Pyongyang or Tehran, he'll drop a test tube and unleash a pathogen no mask or lockdown or half-assed vaccine can stop. When it's done its work and the very last wind turbine has ceased twirling because no one has climbed up to those bearings with an oil can, will the coyotes and rattlers and kangaroo rats notice? We might not have been the first bipeds they've seen come and go. Maybe that's the real attraction of the desert. Maybe that's the secret everyone's looking for out there. But even if you don't unlock any secrets, the sunsets cannot be beat. At the same time as the display in the sky, there's a floor show right at your feet. All those critters that have been hiding from the hot sun come out of their burrows and start leaping and slithering and dancing and hooting. It's party time. Maybe those musicians knew more than we think. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by thatlarryshow.com for hundreds of other episodes. Fantastic images, videos, comment, and commentary. It's kind of like the after party for each episode. While there, click a subscribe button so you never miss a show. If you really like what you heard, click the Patreon or PayPal button and help support the show. Join the Take No Shit Dojo. It's a wonderful place filled with bonus content, signed books, custom recordings, and the fellowship of others who know what time it is. Follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and a cool social network called Mastodon. You can find links to all those places on the show page. Write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. I saw a lot more things while up in the high desert. A swap meet that literally contained all the crap in the world. A hike through some eye-popping rock formations with mysterious petroglyphs. And a microbrewery down a lonely dirt road where little green men reputedly grab six-packs to go on their intergalactic voyages. Maybe I'll get into that next time, or maybe some earth-shattering event will take us on another detour. You never know. I'll see you next Wednesday. And until that time, take no shit.